Hey everybody, Wasilla Steve here from Alaska. You know, I listen to 5 or 6 podcasts regularly, and one of them is The Handgun World. And why? Because I, too, am a cancer survivor. And because Bob survived cancer, and I survived cancer, Bob got the pleasure of teaching me in 2 of his classes. And boy, did he ever enjoy that. And I'm not trying to brag or anything, but he taught the best student he has ever had. That being my good friend who attended the classes with me. So here now, a true survivor, a great American, and hands down, one of the best instructors I know, Bob Main.
From the Handgun World Mobile Studio, this is episode number 356, talking about a bunch of guns, a bunch of gear, and even personal defense weapons. Bob Main, I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And this episode of the Handgun World Podcast is a practical show done by a practical guy. That is me, because my background does not come from law enforcement or military. It doesn't even come from gunsmithing or anything like that. I'm not an author or anything. I am just an ordinary guy that takes my Second Amendment rights very seriously. A Yankee with a gun, born in New York City, raised in Wisconsin. Now I live in the great gun-friendly state of Texas. And so this week I got a chance to get together with Ben Branham, and that interview is coming up pretty soon. Ben Branham is, how about that? Ben Branham is my good friend. He is the host of the Modern Self-Protection Podcast. We teach classes together occasionally, and we also practice together quite a bit. We recently got a chance to get together and practice for about an hour and a half, and we kind of train each other on some things, and it's pretty good. That's a good way to do it. If you can find a practice and training partner that you can get together with on a regular basis, it'll do worlds of good for your shooting. Well, we got a chance to shoot a bunch of different guns. I've made a few changes in my collection of guns, and he's also made a couple changes. And so we got a chance to kind of shoot some different guns and evaluate them. And of course, I got a new Walther PPS M2, the new Walther PPS M2 version, kind of a copy or a mimic of the PPQ M2, which I'm very impressed with, and I'll have more about that later. So we talked about that. Ben got a chance to shoot it, and I think you're going to enjoy this interview. I've also got some voicemails that I'm going to talk about. Some listeners called in some really cool voicemails and had some very, very good questions, so I will be discussing those as well. Let me go ahead and do a quick review right up front here. The Walther PPS M2. I got it about a week after SHOT Show. I was in Houston, Texas on some business, and a friend of mine, we went to do some shooting at a range and went to a gun store and checked it out, and there it was, and I thought, you know, I'm going to take a chance on this because I had heard some real good things about it. I did a YouTube review. If you go to my YouTube channel, YouTube, just search Handgun World Podcast on YouTube and you'll find me. And it's also on my Facebook page, my Handgun World Podcast Facebook page. Watch that video. I did a YouTube review, the first 100 rounds shot through my Walther PPS M2. Here's what I think about it. There are a lot of single-stack nines on the market. Everybody's into single-stack nines now. Every manufacturer makes them. It's kind of like when the Pocket 380s were becoming really popular. Everybody made, and they still make, a Pocket 380. Now it seems like everybody's getting into the single-stack 9mm game. Why? Well, because the thinness and the size and the fact that you could shoot a 9mm cartridge through them, they make it great for concealing. And manufacturers are making these guns so good now. These guns are accurate. They're reliable. They're relatively easy to shoot. They're relatively easy to handle. And it's hard to go wrong with really any of these single stack 9mm for concealed carry. I still wouldn't make one of them my primary go-to gun. But there have been times where I have left the house with only a single stack 9mm and a backup magazine. So I'll go ahead and I'll admit that. It's not my primary go-to. My Glock 19 is still, or my Walther PPQ M2, both of those are still my primary go-to weapon. And most of the time I can be found carrying a Glock 19 with an extra magazine in a mag holder, a horizontal mag pouch. And lately I've been carrying my Glock 19 in only a Concealment Solutions Cobra outside the waistband holster. So how many of you have a single stack 9mm? The very first one I ever purchased was a Carr PM9. Still have it, probably always will. Love that gun. Just really, really like Carr PM9s for lots of reasons. It's still the most concealable of any single stack 9mm that I've ever owned or tried. Now, recently, we gave away my Springfield XDS that I had purchased, the XDS 9mm 3-inch version. We gave away that on the Shooters Club to a very deserving Shooters Club member who supported us, Chris in Dallas, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Congratulations again to Chris. The XDS just wasn't for me. A lot of people love the Springfield XDS. Well, now Walther has entered the game with the PPS M2. Well, they had the old PPS, okay, the PPS Classic. That's been out for a long time. So I don't want to make it sound like Walther's just now getting into single stack nines. It's been out, you know, they've had the PPS for a long time out there. But this PPS M2 is very, very much improved. First of all, they got rid of the changeable back strap. They got rid of the changeable back strap. I think that's a good thing. Why? Because there was a design flaw in the old PPS, in my opinion. The design flaw was, if the back strap broke off or was removed, you couldn't operate the gun. You couldn't fire the gun. And I didn't care for that. You know, if that gun was dropped and that back strap broke off, you couldn't operate the gun. And is really only being held on there by plastic. So I really didn't care for that design. And it was mainly for that reason I shied away from owning and carrying a Walther PPS. The PPS M2, they got rid of that. And they made the grip very similar to a PPQ M2. Now, if you ever shot a PPQ M2, I would be very surprised if you didn't totally like that gun, especially the trigger. I would have to say right now, out of all polymer pistols that are on the market and available today, polymer striker-fired guns, the Walther PPQ M2 still has the absolute best trigger out of the box, without any modifications at all. And the PPS M2 is pretty close to the same. I was very impressed. So check out my YouTube video, the first 100 rounds. And I do a complete review on the gun. And then you don't see me shoot all 100 rounds, but you see me shoot a lot of them. And I did put 100 rounds through it at the range while my son took a real nice video of me doing the whole thing and the whole review. I think you'll be impressed with it. I'll put a link in the show notes for this episode. So if you want to just go directly to it, go to handgunworld.com and go to that link. The other thing I'll say that they've made an improvement on with the new PPS M2 is the magazine release button. It's got an American style magazine release button on it. In other words, it's got the push button with your strong hand thumb. like most of us in America, most of the guns that we carry here in America, we're used to that. Now, I know in Europe they're used to different things. In Europe they like to have what's typically called the paddle mag release, which is, it's built onto the trigger guard. And you know, it's like pushing down a paddle. And some people use their trigger finger, some use their middle finger. I just didn't care for the paddle mag release. Some people like it because it's truly ambidextrous. And people like that. You know, I've trained myself so much, if I'm going to eject the mag and perform a reload or clear a malfunction, I've trained myself so much to use my thumb to push that mag release button that I'd have to completely retrain myself to carry the old PPS or the old version of the PPQ. So I'm glad that Walther did that. They put the American style mag release button on there. The gun balances well. It sits a little bit too high in the hand for my liking, but it's not uncontrollable. You know, there is some muzzle rise, some distinct muzzle rise to it, but not bad. It's pretty controllable. The grip has good texture on it, not over aggressive. The finger grooves are not over aggressive. Some people don't like that about Glocks, that the finger grooves are too aggressive and don't fit their hands properly. The Walther PPQ, or excuse me, the Walther PPS M2, I think has corrected that. The only criticism I have of the gun right now, and this is probably going to get fixed, is I can't find magazines for the darn thing. Magazines are not available yet, extra magazines. I did call Walther directly in Fort Smith, Arkansas, and I asked them if they had any magazines, and all they had was an 8-rounder, and I don't have an 8-rounder. So I bought the 8-round, and hopefully it's being shipped to me. I did not get the LE version of the Walther PPS M2. I got the standard version. It comes with a 6-round and a 7-round magazine. The 7-round magazine has a real nice extension and makes the grip feel extremely good. And it's a very concealable gun. There's also an 8-round. The LE, the law enforcement version, has some fancy sights, and it comes with 3 mags, a 6-round, 7-round, and an 8-round magazine. I did not get that version, but I'll have pretty much the LE version once I get my 8-round magazine. But I sure hope that pretty soon Walther's got mags, because my favorite so far is that 7-round mag, and I want to get 3 or 4 more of those, because I like to have at least... 6 or 7 magazines for every semi-automatic pistol that I own. So I'm going to refer you to my YouTube video if you want to see my detailed review and hear about that. I think I did a real good job with that. Check that out. And one quick announcement I want to say before I put on the interview with Ben Branham. And that is, I got a new Handgun World mobile studio. How about that? Yeah. No, I didn't go out and buy a new car. My son finally got his driver's license, right? He finally did. He finally got his driver's license. So the old 2002 Honda with 157,000 miles on it, that's been the Handgun World mobile studio now for the last 4.5 years or so, 4.5, almost 5 years, now belongs to my son. So I'm driving the 2007 Honda Accord. 5 years newer. I've got 2 Honda Accords. Hey, it just tells you, I like Honda Accords. They work very well for me. They make great sales cars. Most of you know my full-time job, I'm an outside salesman. And so they make great sales cars because they get 30 miles a gallon on the freeway, which I'm driving down right now. They got plenty of room for going out and doing business and making sales calls. And they're just practical. And they run. So I've only got 105,000 miles on this paid for 2007 Honda Accord, and it's a little bit fancier because it's the EXL version, so I get to ride in a little bit better style than I used to. You know, folks, I got into trouble years ago with car payments, just way too many, and the car payments were just, you know, sucking our finances dry. For a while there, for many years we had 2 car payments. And so, you know, now I've switched to the Dave Ramsey philosophy, and, you know, I like to drive paid for cars. So both of these are paid for. And so now I pray every day, that my son does not have a major wreck with the old Handgun World mobile studio. so that he can drive it for a long time, because I just had some nice work done to that car, and it should last him for a long time if he can keep it from hitting something. Oh, well. We'll see how that goes. But, you know, he's a pretty responsible kid. He's going to be 18 next month. So I'm proud of my son. All right. Just a quick break, and I'll talk with Ben Branham. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'm with Ben. Ben, how's it going, man?
Hey, it's going good. We got to the range again. Yay, us.
We got to the range again. Well, Ben Branham from the Modern Self-Protection Podcast. We did some more practicing, just like we did a few weeks ago. So we're going to talk about that. And what I asked Ben to talk about was, you know, we shot a bunch of different guns. He shot some that I have, some new ones that you hadn't had a chance to shoot.
Yeah.
And things like that. I think people would like to hear your opinions on it. So let's talk about my Walther PPS. What did you think?
That thing's pretty slick. I like the PPS. I've always liked that Walther PPS. The first generation was super thin, and so it fits a lot of people, a little nice grip, super easy to conceal because it's so thin. But it was kind of squared off, like the whole slide, the grip, everything. Now you've got the Gen 2 that's more rounded and has finger grooves more like a PPQ.
Yeah.
The Generation 1 had big old huge finger grooves on it that most people didn't like. So the grip was really nice. The Walther makes just the best trigger in the industry when it comes to a plastic gun. And I know it's a polymer frame.
Polymer, no plastic.
Okay. They make the best one in a polymer striker fired gun, just hands down. It's the best kit in there. It's like putting a ghost kit in your Glock or an Apex trigger in your M&P. They come out of the box that good. So that trigger didn't disappoint. The gun was a little bit snappy because it's small, so that's about right. For me, my hands are too big. I have oddball size hands, and they don't fit much of anything, which just sucks to be me, but, you know, life is life.
That's the way
so
it goes.
So it's a little bit snappy because the gun is so small for me. But the trigger was real nice. The sights were good. The accuracy was fine. We're shooting at 25, 30 yards and making hits on steel every time, as long as we weren't goofing off. When we started talking to each other and not paying attention is when we started.
When I was talking and shooting at the same time, I was missing.
Never does. You can't do it. You can't do it. It's just physically impossible. So, but the gun did its job, no problem. The only discerning thing that you kind of don't, if you get in the zone, you don't see it. But I saw it because that firing pin comes out the back of the gun. I don't know if it's to see it's cocked or not, but when you press the trigger, you can see that the firing pin comes out further. And then when you release the trigger to go back to reset, you can see that it's like the firing mechanism come back all the way again and it releases itself. It's really weird to watch your trigger reset.
It doesn't bother me, but
I know, when you were shooting it, it's the first thing I saw, and I was like, wow, that's really weird.
Yeah.
And then when I started shooting it, I noticed it when I was shooting it. So it probably won't be that big a deal.
And that's not like that on the full-size PPQ.
No. The PPQ doesn't have it at all. That's a holdover from the P99 that had a striker indicator, whether it was cocked or not. It stuck out the back of the gun, kind of like XD does now. But the other big thing on that gun is now it's a push-button magazine release instead of the German paddled magazine.
That's the PPS M2.
So for some reason, well, the PPS
M2 is the one I got.
Has the push button.
Has the push button like the American style mag release.
The original has a paddle release where you push down,
right,
and the whole trigger guard moves, which is kind of weird. Us Americans don't like anything different, but for some reason the Germans really like that. I mean, H&K still does it. Walther came out with their original guns here and did that, and then they listened to the American market and went, "Oh, wait a second, nobody really wants that."
The Europeans like it though.
Yeah.
And actually, I've had some people since I did the YouTube review on this gun. I've had some people say to me that they actually prefer the paddle style mag release on the trigger guard, because a lot of people who own H&Ks, a lot of H&Ks are that.
Oh, yeah, they're all like that.
Yeah.
But there was two points to that, really, that makes the gun completely ambidextrous.
Yep.
Most guns, I mean, even the M&P I carry, I can switch the magazine release from one side to the other, but I can't run it on both sides at the same time, which, by the way, Glock and M&P, dum-dums, Smith & Wesson, why didn't you make it just ambidextrous? And don't tell me it can't be
like
done.
Like a Springfield XD.
I was going to say, don't tell me it can't be done because it's done on the XD.
XDMs.
No, the XDs, the XDMs,
oh, really?
The XDS,
oh, okay.
The XD Mod 2, all the whole XD line does ambidextrous magazine.
So it can be done.
So it can be done. So, I don't know. But so that's nice. But the push button, they molded it into the handle real well. Sometimes those little guns, when you want to carry them right up against your body, that release kind of gets activated. And I know it's when I used to carry a Caltech P32, itty-bitty gun, so even smaller than the Walther. But I used to, I inadvertently, if I would check to see if the gun was there, if I'd bump it against something when it was in my pocket or on my belt, that magazine release would bump every once in a while, and that was discerning. I actually took the one I carried and took a piece of sandpaper to it and rubbed it down so that it wouldn't come off. But so the Walter, okay. They do that. I thought that was really, really well.
I think they've designed that mag button very well. For us Americans that like the push button.
Yeah, and it's got a little hump that protects it, so I don't think you're gonna have that problem where it's gonna get bumped out. So I think
correct.
Yeah, they did a really good job on that. But the trigger is just the thing that you always notice out of the trigger.
The trigger is awesome. And as a matter of fact, I would say for the little single stack nines, the little tiny single stack nines, out of all of them that I've shot, it's got the best trigger.
Well, yeah.
Out of all of them.
But that's generally, and that's against, I'm thinking of all the single stacks we've shot lately. The Shield, Glock,
XDS, Carr, and
I think those are the three that I've been playing with.
Yeah.
Lately.
Now, I have shot a Ruger LC9S Pro.
Oh, cool.
I did a few months ago. And I would say that trigger is about as equal, it's about equal to the PPS. Yeah.
I have to get my hands on one.
I just didn't like the ergonomics of that Ruger.
No, it's square and flat.
Yeah, real square and flat, and sits really high in the hand.
But it was designed to sit square and flat, so it'd be concealable.
No,
yeah,
my PPS is kind of high in the hand, but it's
but
not.
So is all the Walters, though. That's
basically all.
The P99 sat a little bit lower in your hand towards the Glock, but the PPQ sits pretty high.
Yeah.
I actually noticed the PPQ. I don't notice the difference in the recoil impulse over the Glock of the MP.
You do.
Because it sticks higher.
Yeah.
It's not really that big a deal. I'm sure if I shot it more, it would just go away for me. But it is different. And then when I shot the 5-inch version of the PPQ, though, I didn't notice with the extra slide weight and stuff, I didn't notice the recoil at all. So,
I know. You know, my PPQ, it's definitely got a whole lot more muzzle rise.
A little snap, yeah.
Than my Glock or an M&P.
Yeah.
But when Tracy Thronberg was down here in November,
the 5-inch,
and I shot her 5-inch, that was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was nice.
I shot her 5-inch gun, and then I need one of these.
Yeah, me too. It was like,
I'm lucky the shop doesn't have any right now because I probably would have bought
no,
one.
No, I would have bought it.
Yeah, so I'm glad they didn't. I'm glad we're out of them, so I don't buy one. And I got
when you getting
that.
Another one?
That trigger press was beautiful.
Well, it's the same trigger as the PPQ 4-inch.
They say that, but it feels different to me. I can't quantify it, but it feels different. All of them I picked up, they feel a little different to
and
me.
Tracy had Dawson fiber optic front sights on hers,
whatever.
Which was, I liked it. I like that.
Whatever sights, I'll use whatever sights are on the gun. I don't care all that
well,
much.
Well, you know, what's on the PPQ is polymer sights. You know, a lot of people have been, you know.
I didn't even notice that.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people have
yours,
been.
And I shot at three or four of them now. I never even noticed that.
A lot of people have complained about Glock's polymer sights and the Walther PPQ. And I don't know, I can't remember if my PPS M2 has polymer or not. I think it does. But I know the PPQ does. It's got polymer.
Well, and then that's manufacturing costs. Glock is probably manufacturing sights for a couple dollars each to go on a gun in plastic. And then if you put them in the steel sights on there, steel is probably three or four times as much for them to manufacture. So I understand that. And we all change out our sights anyways.
Yeah.
So I don't have anything against that.
So your impression of the PPQ M2 is? PPQ.
I think it's the
PPQ.
Oh, the PPQ. I liked it. It was just a little bit snappy. I'd have to get used to it. And it doesn't fit my hand right for some reason. Maybe it's the balance or something. It doesn't fit perfect. The 5-inch gun, that one balances really well
for
me.
The balance is better.
See, if I was going to buy one like you did, hands down, I would have waited for the 5-inch gun. I wouldn't even touch the 4-inch gun. It would have been the 5-inch gun. And maybe that's just how I shoot, how I hold the gun, way my hands are. It just felt it felt that much different to me that if I had to carry a Walter, I'd just carry the 5-inch gun, and I wouldn't even look back.
But did you like the new PPS M2?
Yeah, and the PPS M2, well, you said the PPQ.
I said the PPQ.
The PPS M2, yeah, I like that better than the original because the way it fits, the way it's rounded off. It shot really nice. It's got a beautiful trigger. It has a much better trigger than the original, and it's a nice gun. I think the price point is less, too. The PPS was not that cheap of a gun.
I bought it from your. No, I didn't.
Bought it from somebody else.
Yeah, the PPQ. We got to talk about that. The PPQ I bought.
Cheating on me. Cheating on me.
I know. I'm cheating on you. I'm an unreliable date. But anyway, the PPQ I got from you guys was priced reasonable too.
Yeah.
Under $500.
Well, yeah, and they're just a little bit more than the Glock or the M&P series gun. you're taking.
Well, then maybe it wasn't under 500.
Yeah, it's, I think they're going.
No, the PPS was under 500.
Yeah.
The PPQ was, I think, like 579 or something like that, or 569.
Yeah, it's another $50 to $100 for the PPQ over the Glock. Yeah.
So I made a mistake on that. Sorry.
But then the PPS, yeah, that new one, that it's almost $599 for the original model, and I know the new one is going to be cheaper. And
it is.
Just like the Walther CCP was cheaper. So they're manufacturing cheaper and they're putting them out cheaper, which they got to compete with the Shield. The price of the Shield has come up a little bit.
Yeah.
Man, when you dug, you used to be able to find those for like $350, $375. I think those days are gone. The price of manufacturing has gone up, unfortunately.
I've seen people say that they've posted on the internet they've gotten Shields for like $330 plus tax. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. But
yeah, the Sparks price right now is $399, I think, or $409, right in there. Right at $400. Not a bad deal for that gun at all.
The Shield is still my favorite 9mm single stack. It's still my favorite. I thought the PPS was, I was going to like it better, but I'm still liking the Shield.
And you know what? I've been shooting them more and more, and you're gonna laugh at me. But if I had to pick a single stack 9mm right now, I'd go with the Glock 43.
I knew you were going to say why. Why?
It didn't fit my hand real well. It was ugly in my hand. Yeah. They all are. None of them fit my hand well because I got freaking bear paws. But the gun, when I put the extended magazine on there, the little hook on there, and my hand still doesn't fit with the hook on there.
Yeah.
So
really?
My finger goes down the bottom. So I put my little pinky around the bottom of the gun and hold up from the bottom of the gun, and it actually makes the gun recoil less on me, and I can do better and faster follow-up shots.
Okay, if that works.
It really oddball, because with that pinky hook that comes with the gun from Glock, my fingers doesn't fit. And when the first round, it kind of fits, and the first round I shoot, it kind of falls off as soon as the gun recoils.
Yeah.
But it sits right in there, and my pinky hook's underneath, and it wedges right in there in my hand, and it shoots really well. I know it's an unorthodox way, but it worked really well. And then I shot without the pinky extension on there, and I couldn't get my finger to hook the same way. It didn't work as well.
So your choice of single stack nines would be a Glock 43.
Glock 43. Isn't that sad?
Okay. Well, and, you know, people know how much I like Glocks, but I still like, in the single stacks, I still like the Shield better than the Glock 43. I own both.
Yeah.
I own both. And, you know, I got the Glock 43 from you guys, and I got the two shields from you guys.
Yeah, so here's how weird I am. So I carry a Smith & Wesson M&P9, the full-size gun. That's my favorite one to shoot right now, bar none. And then if I got a single stack, little 9mm, it would be Glock 43. And then I carry a Ruger LCR 38 Special Revolver as my backup gun. So I really have there's no real winner when it comes to which one is better. And if I was going to go with a 5-inch gun, because you had that 5-inch M&P, which I liked.
Yeah.
But I still like the Walther PPQ 5-inch gun better.
You like the 5-inch PPQ better than the 5-inch M&P?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm just completely all over the board.
You are all over the board. Okay.
Which gun do I have to carry? Oh, I got to carry a 5-inch gun? Give me the Walther.
So since we're talking about 5-inch guns for a minute, I also recently got a 4-inch M&P Pro. What do you think of that compared to the 5-inch M&P Pro?
M&P first Pro. Of all, the sights that you've got on there, not liking those.
I have just regular Meprolite night sights.
Oh, did you put those on there?
No, they were with the gun.
Oh, they came with the gun. Not liking those at all because they have that little indention. I like the flat back rear sight.
Yeah.
And this one has an indention where the Meprolite, the
Global Guard. The tritium vial's in the indention. Sit. Yeah.
Yeah, and it just annoys the crap out of me when I'm trying to I don't know why. Personal preference, doesn't matter. But that was the sights. The pistol shoots fine. The timing is a little bit more advanced. And when I say timing, during the trigger stroke, the gun fires a little sooner than their standard gun.
Mm-hmm.
And then that trigger feels like my worn-in gun that I've got 6,000, 7,000 rounds in through it. And now the trigger's worn in very nicely.
It's the Pro Series
but
trigger.
The Pro piece. And if you talk to them, it really cost them another $10 or so to manufacture the nice trigger than the crappy trigger. But it's all about making that price point to hit that Glock.
Yeah.
If they were another $20, you know, if they had to sell them
then
for
they'd be
$20
more expensive
more
than a Glock.
Then they'd be $20 more than the Glock.
But you know what, though?
They're in there.
But still, the Glock can be, and I'm going to say this very carefully, a better value in the Gen 4 because you get 3 mags instead of 2. Smith & Wesson only gives you 2 mags.
2 mags, which I always thought 3 mags should be your standard.
Glock gives you 3 mags.
Yeah, and magazines are $35 or $40. But, you know, most people don't look at that when they buy the gun. They look, a Glock is this much, the M&P is this much, the Glock is cheaper, let me get the Glock.
So for 5-inch guns, you like the Walther 5-inch?
Yeah. And they're the more, it's more expensive than all of them.
Yeah.
I think it's more expensive than the M&P right now and the Glock.
The reason I got the 4-inch Walther from you, the PPQ, is because that gun fits in the new IDPA CCP division.
Yeah.
The 5-inch doesn't. 5-inch is an SSP.
And I shoot IDPA so little anymore that it doesn't matter.
Well,
I'm like, whatever. Yeah. I think my M&P is actually in the top division, too.
It's an SSP.
Because it's got a 4.25-inch barrel. And the Glock.
You have to have 4 inches or less to be in the new concealed carry pistol.
4.1, because the Glock...
4.1, yeah.
Because the Glock 19 is 4.09 inches.
Correct, yes.
Which, by
yes.
the way, is like the perfect length.
It is.
And I tested
so
that.
So speaking
today.
Of that, since we're talking about Glock.
Glock sizes.
You said something very, I wasn't expecting it to come out of your mouth at the range, but you were talking about maybe switching back to a Glock. Why?
Yes, I'm thinking about it.
Why?
So sad. actually, no, I'm really into the PDWs right now, the personal defense weapons, the short barrel rifles.
Yeah.
And I was going to get an SBR, and I got one of the AR pistols with a 9-inch barrel in it, and I didn't like it. It was just too much of a flamethrower.
Oh, you had an AR pistol with a 9-inch barrel?
Yeah, I sold that one because I didn't like it.
Oh, you're talking about the Rock River.
Yeah. Had.
Okay.
Beautiful gun.
Was it Rock River?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Piston-driven system.
Yeah,
really
yeah.
expensive. Gorgeous gun. Shot like a house on fire.
You sold it? Why?
But it was just, I wanted something I can use tactically and carry in a bag with me.
Yeah.
And then that thing with a 9-inch barrel is just a flamethrower.
Yeah.
And it's so loud.
A lot of people don't realize that at all.
Oh, man, those little ARs and just rock your world loud.
Can you imagine shooting that indoors?
Without hearing protection on? Holy snot.
After one shot, you'd never want to fire it again.
Well, yeah, you'd ring your own chimes.
Yep.
And that was the problem with those. So I'm looking at it, and the 5.56, the ballistics are way better, except for the little barrels. You know, when we measure ballistics, we're always looking at a 9mm handgun versus a 5.56 20-inch barrel. And out of the 20-inch barrel, the 5.56 does some pretty amazing crap, especially up close.
Mm-hmm.
But out of that 9-inch barrel, not so much. What you really got is the terminal ballistics of a 9mm that'll pop through body armor, soft body armor.
Yeah, so with huge muzzle flash and a lot of noise.
Yeah, I was willing to do that, but there's just really no way to tame that thing down with a short 7.5 or 9-inch barrel. And so I'm giving up on that because I want something I can throw in a bag, like a backpack, and walk around and not look like I'm carrying a rifle. So then I'm like, oh, well, you know, they got all these Ronnie frames, Glock stocks, and there's four or five other companies out there that are making a frame that you put your handgun into, and now all it does is really give it a stock, a place for you to put your second hand, a sling attachment, and you can put an optic on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, hey, that would be perfect because then that will fit in a backpack. Or I got a long messenger bag that I think that would fit into. It's got an extra flap in it, so I can put my computer in the front and my freaking rifle in the back.
So you're thinking of making a PDW out of a Glock.
So, yeah. But the M&P, for some reason, and I think it's political, I can't prove it. I think Smith & Wesson's being stupid. Can't prove it, but just my hunch. And so they're not nobody's making one for the M&P series, which is really weird because the Glock is obviously the most popular gun in the market by far. And then fighting for second is Beretta and the M&P. Beretta's got a large share of the market just because the military side right now. As soon as they lose that military contract, the Beretta M9 is going to go belly up almost.
Mm.
But, yeah, so why don't they – but you look at it like Ronnie. They make one even for the Jericho. They make one for – crap, one of the companies makes one for a Bursa Thunder 380. and
all, right.
all the different Berettas, a bunch of HKs, bunch of SIGs, but not one M&P. So I'm kind of wondering why.
So that's where Glock comes in.
But, yeah, so I'm thinking about doing that. And one of the biggest reasons, if I'm going to go to that 9mm cartridge, I'm going to have something use the same magazines as the pistol I carry.
Right.
Why would I do anything else? Because I got a pistol. I always got the pistol on my belt and an extra mag.
Right.
So if the world goes to crap and I grab my carbine out of my bag, if nothing else, I've got another magazine on my belt.
Yeah.
To
so it would
there.
Be a 9mm carbine personal
right.
defense weapon, which is basically a Glock. It'd be
a
Glock, either a 19 or a 17.
Yeah, and most of them fit the 17. I really like the 19 better. I might end up buying a 17 just to drop it in there. Doesn't matter, really, once I drop it in the carbine. But it's just something I'd love to have because then I have...
17 holds more rounds.
But throw... But I carry 17-round magazines anyways.
That's true.
Because my Glock, if I'm carrying my Glock 19, I'll have a 15-round magazine in the gun and a 17-round magazine on my belt.
And with a carbine, you can put the 33-round in there and still probably fit in your backpack, no problem.
Right. Or now was it, Magpul, they're making the 20-round magazine,
right,
which might stick out just a little bit, would probably fit the bag better.
Yeah.
So if I put the 20-round magazine in there, now I got 20.
And I've been hearing good things about the Magpul Glock mags. I haven't. I don't own any.
I have one, and it works fine.
Yeah.
I haven't had a problem with it yet. So, yeah. But I'm thinking, hey, if I put that 20-round magazine in there, and then I have one on my belt, I can solve pretty much. I hope I can solve any problem that I can come up with mm-hmm. with that. But there's all these give and take. So I really want to get the SBR to start testing and playing with it. So I think I'm going to SBR Glock just to test it, and we'll see how it goes from there.
Now, I want to be clear. I want to be clear for anybody who wants to do this. You do have to get an SBR to do this.
When I say I'm going to SBR a Glock, that means I am going to go through the tax stamp, the legal paperwork. It'll take me 3, 4 to 6 months, somewhere in there,
more
to get my tax stamp back to legally do this.
I've heard it's like 6 to 9 months.
Oh.
Yeah.
I got to go. I got to talk to these guys. We're at a place to shoot, and they do class 3 weapons. I got to talk to them and see what their time is right now.
As soon as we get done doing this, we can go talk to them.
I'll go ask them. But yes, I am going to definitely do that legally, without a doubt. There will be no illegal crap in my house.
Does Sparks do the class 3 weapons?
No, they don't.
Oh, okay.
So I can't do it through Sparks, and that's why I don't have a time frame, because we don't do that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But I know a lot of people that do. So
I like your idea.
I get it.
And I have a Glock 17. Maybe I'll do that with a Glock 17. Maybe I'll finally get my SBR. I've only been thinking about it for 4 years.
I've been thinking about it for about 3, so we're in there. And, you know, that AR I had, the short-barreled AR pistol, I was going to SBR that and put a stock on it, a folding stock, and then I had a backpack for it. It fit real well. But then it was too heavy, too bulky, and then it just was nasty.
So what do you think are the advantages of SBRing a Glock versus just carrying a Glock pistol?
Oh, the stock.
Okay, the stock.
The stock, and the optic that I can put on it.
Okay, the stock
so
and the optic.
So if I put a stock and a red dot on it, it just...
Yeah, but you can put a red dot on a pistol.
But it'll go, the stock is just where it's at.
Okay.
The pistol, the red dot on the pistol, I'm sure, still not sure about it. I've tested a couple of them. Yes, I want one because they're cool. I'm not sure if that's going to replace my iron sights, though. But the optic...
I think it's going to. I think everything is going to red dot...
Eventually.
RDS, to red dot sights.
I think that, you want to talk technology? I think eventually you'll have a stupid heads-up display on the top of your gun where nothing will... There'll be nothing on top of your gun at all. The slide will be completely rounded, and there'll be a little projection that's your dot that puts it up there like a heads-up display for a fighter pilot, but without the windscreen. So sooner
or
later,
that's interesting.
You won't even see it in the gun. It'll be built into the gun. The battery will last you about 15 years, and you'll never have to worry about it. It'll turn itself on and off, but yeah.
But the next step are our red dot sights.
But honestly, I think that's where the technology will end up. It's just going to take a long way, a long time. And then from there, who knows, maybe we will get self-guided bullets.
I don't know.
But yeah, the technology is where it's going to go. But right now, the red dot, the RMRs and stuff on top, I'm not sure if I like them or not, because it makes it so much of a higher plane that you have to look up.
Well, I'll tell you what, a friend of mine in Houston, I won't mention his name, but he knows who he is, and he's probably listening right now. When the last time I was in Houston, he let me shoot his Glock 17 with a Trijicon RMR.
Cool.
And he let me shoot it a lot. Yeah. I got to shoot several magazines through it, and it took some getting used to, but I really started to like it. And I think pretty soon I'm going to buy, and I'm a little bit biased, but pretty soon I'm going to buy one of Gabe Suarez's slides with an RMR for a fourth generation Glock 19, and I'm going to take the red dot pistol school in September probably.
Cool.
I'm going to go take Gabe's red dot pistol school.
Now that the price came down, it's pretty worth it.
Yes.
I tested one in... Was it 2010, 2011, somewhere in there? I got one to test.
Yeah, back then.
And it was the optic and the slide with all the internals and everything. So I just dropped it on top of mine. It was like $1,400.
I think. Well, yeah, they're a lot less than that now.
It was ungodly expensive.
Yeah, they're a lot less than that now, and I think some of the challenges have been worked out.
I think Suarez got mad at me when I gave him a negative review because I was like, for $1,400. Buy ammo and a couple training classes.
Yeah, but it's not $1,400 anymore.
Oh no, the price. I think with the optic now, you can get them for $700 or $800.
It's over $800. But
okay.
if you go to SuarezInternational.com, go to their gear store, you can build it.
Yeah, I'm talking.
You can build it with the RMR and
the slide
and Suarez's slide and the barrel and the internals and all that.
Yeah, just it was ungodly expensive.
With the barrel, I don't think it's $800, but you have to add a little bit more for the barrel.
I'm so cheap. Just send me a slide with the RMR on top of it.
Yeah.
I'll drop my internals and my barrel on it and everything.
Yeah, there you go.
So I think that's where the technology is going to go. But right now, that rifle stock is just – I'm good with a handgun, and I don't want to float my own tone. But we can stand at 25 and 30 yards, and you and I can hit – all the time.
We were doing that today.
And we can do it consistently as long as we concentrate. But it really our pace is going to be a quarter sec or half a or well, no, probably about a second on our split times to make a hit every time on a human side target that way.
Yeah.
I know with my rifle I can do split times like my pistol up close of 0.20 seconds double taps at 50 yards and hit every time. So the amount of time that it goes is just so when I put that stock to a rifle, the time is just ungodly.
So you're thinking the same thing will happen when you put the stock on the Glock pistol.
That's what I'm hoping for, and that's where I want to test it. And with a rifle, of course, I use my rifle either with my irons or my dot sight. I have that longer barrel, and that always pointing always makes a difference with the longer barrel. So we're going to see when we shorten that way up and just put the pistol in there. I know the pistol's capable of making hits like that. When I put it in the stock, am I capable of making hits like that? And if I am, that is just the way to go. If you think anything, if you're gonna end up in a gunfight or the worst case scenario, terrorism, active shooter, school shooter, anything like that, I would love to reach into my bag and pull that rifle out. Try to reach under my shirt and pull my Glock out and try to, you know.
And there's something to be said for that being the same as your pistol with the same mags, the same ammo, everything.
I think it's the way to go.
Yeah.
9mm ammo is a little heavier than 5.56 ammo, so if you guys that are out there on tac teams and stuff, if you're getting all tacked up and you're putting your vest on and everything, I still think the 10.5-inch AR is the way to go, but you'll be wearing Hearing Pro when you put your vest on, you grab your rifle, put your helmet on. You better be putting Hearing Pro on. If you're not, I should come over and slap the crap out of you. But put your Hearing Pro on. Or you can run the 10-inch barrel if you're really tacked out and put a 4-inch suppressor on there. And now you got something really cool. Well, you know, it's cool anyways. But, you know, tac teams, that's how you should be running it. Well, but when I'm talking about carrying just a satchel around or a backpack, I'm not going to be pulling out the ear pro when I pull out the rifle.
No.
I need to pull out the rifle and go to town. I'd be lucky if I have enough time to swing the bag around, pull out my rifle, and go.
Yeah, the bad guy's probably not going to give you enough time to put your ear pro on.
No.
So, probably not.
And honestly, I've done it. I've fired M16s without my Hearing Pro on. It makes you deaf really, really fast. I'm lucky that I still have my hearing.
I don't want to do it.
A lot of Marines did it, and they don't have their hearing anymore. They have permanent ringing and stuff. Buddies that sat next to me, I wore my Hearing Pro most of the time. They did not most of the time. So
I made the mistake one time just standing next to somebody with their 9mm pistol with no ear protection on, and
it was not much fun. Auditory exclusion, all that other stuff. Yes, that works for you. Yes, it worked for me. Tell you in combat, I've done it both ways. I had Hearing Pro on when I fought, and I didn't have Hearing Pro on at the time. It sounded the same, but afterwards, your hearing still goes away.
Well, so you might have solved the problem for me then, because I've been wanting a backpack gun, and I came this close, about an inch from buying an AR pistol once, but I didn't. Kind of glad I didn't.
Well,
maybe I should SBR a Glock.
While you're thinking about it, the other one I'm still thinking about is a Caltech Sub 2000.
Yeah.
It folds in half. When it folds in half, it's smaller than most of the ARs are on the market, the AR pistols.
And it takes Glock magazines.
And it takes Glock magazines.
Yeah.
So, well, I hope you guys, we gave some stuff to think about.
Yeah.
I have got to run.
I got to run too.
My kid.
All right. Thanks, Ben. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks everybody for listening.
Good afternoon. This is your captain speaking with just a little flight information. Coming up on the left, we're going to be catching a glimpse of the Grand Canyon. On the right, you can be able to see the Hoover Dam in just a few minutes. We're flying at an altitude of 37,000 feet, and our airspeed is 400 miles an hour. Couple little facts here. I'm packing a Colt King Cobra. That's a 357 caliber firearm with a black rubber grip and a 6-inch barrel. Also, the co-pilot is carrying a Kimber custom defense pistol with all the bells and whistles you'd expect from a custom gun of that kind, with an alloy frame and bevel treatment on the entire gun. And our chief flight attendant, Roger, has a Ruger Bearcat 22 with a hand-fluted cylinder. All three are capable of piercing body armor at a distance of up to 27 feet, and it can put a hole in human bone and flesh the size of the Grand Canyon, which, by the way, is coming up on the left-hand side of the plane, so just sit back and relax and enjoy the rest of the flight.
Hi, this is Derek from Atlanta. Unlike Bob, I am a former law enforcement officer, but I still enjoy listening to a practical show by a practical guy. You're listening to the Handgun World Podcast.
All right, good stuff. Thank you very much, Ben. Be sure to listen to his podcast if you don't. It's the Modern Self-Protection Podcast. Ben is going out teaching some classes. He's going up to Arkansas to teach one. He's going to South Carolina to teach one. Of course, he and I are teaching February 20th, coming up real soon in Houston. And it looks like we're going to Alaska the end of June. And we need to get some more people signed up. So for those of you that are up in Alaska and you want to train Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced, we're coming up there in the summer, end of June. You can find everything at handgunworld.com. I've got a special page for training classes. And by the way, folks, if you'd like to support this show, if you think I do a good job, you don't even have to spend any extra money to financially support me. All you have to do is whenever you make a purchase on Amazon, just do two things first. The first one is go to handgunworld.com. The second one is to click Amazon store. If you do those two things, handgunworld.com, Amazon store, when you're on my webpage, and follow that link. Okay, I guess that's three things. If you do that every time, just three simple clicks, it'll take you, what, 5 seconds? You'll be helping me, because everything you buy on Amazon, Amazon will pay me a little bit of a commission on it, and then that way you don't have to spend any extra money to support the Handgun World Podcast. How cool is that? And don't forget about our Shooters Club. Hey, a lot of people like to watch videos to reinforce their skills. And again, it's not a substitute for training, but it's a great way to reinforce and to give you ideas as to what to practice when you're at the range. So Ben and I have put together a great Shooters Club membership program. It's an exclusive video website, password protected. It's only $8 a month or $75 per year. After the first year, you can renew at only $50. And there's almost 50 videos up there, and a whole bunch of audio podcasts that you can really learn from. We put up a new video about once every month. I think you're really going to like that. We encourage you to join the Shooters Club. We're going to do another promotion coming up probably in a couple of months. Don't forget John Payne from Suarez International. He is coming to San Antonio, for those of you that can make it to San Antonio in the middle of May, to teach an M4 rifle gunfighting class. That's going to be good. John told me that it's about three quarters sold out. So don't procrastinate on that. M4 rifle gun fighting. I'm going out next month, March, in late March. I'm going to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, to train with Tom Givens. I'm going to take his two-day combative pistol class. Going to be a student at that one. And I'm going to be a student at John Payne's M4 rifle gunfighting. Ben Branham will be there, and we'll both be students. So again, this is student year for me. I'm not going to do a whole lot of teaching. I'm only going to teach two, maybe three classes all year long. I am doing one private license to carry class. If you're interested, by the way, if you're in Texas and you're interested in having me do a private license to carry class, that's the only way that I do them. I am a Texas DPS certified license to carry instructor. So, in other words, here in Texas, your license allows you to conceal or open carry. It's only a four-hour class, real simple shooting. I will do it, and what I do is I include a two-hour defensive handgun basic lesson. So, I charge a little bit more than most people, but you get a personal, basically a personal class from me for two, maybe 3 hours after the license to carry course is over. And I like to do it privately, like for families or members of, you know, the same people who work together, or, you know, people in a church group, things like that. So if you're interested in that, go ahead and email me, bob@handgunworld.com. bob@handgunworld.com. Okay, let's get to a voicemail.
Hey, Bob. Mark the Nuke here. I was thinking you were saying that you would come across people that would say things like, oh, I can't get a gun because I'm afraid it'll go off, or, you know, I need to get a gun that, or I would get a gun, but, you know, I don't want my children to get it, things like that. And I've had that experience as well, actually very recently, that somebody wanted to get a firearm in the house. I was under the impression that his wife was for lack of a better description, to carry that were with them. And what it was, they had some incidents going around in their neighborhood. She got worried. All of a sudden, guns are a good thing. However, she is scared out of her wits with them, and she has the same attitude that, you know, oh, they could go off, or my kids could get things like that. And I've actually got to the extreme extent to say, well, then, you should not get a gun. It's the same thing with people that are, let's say, people that are nervous drivers, and they would ask, you know, how would I drive in bad weather or on icy roads? And if you're a nervous driver, I'm going to tell you, stay off the roads. Don't get yourself killed. Don't kill other people. And I know it may sound a little bit mean, but if keep the finger off the trigger and stuff like that, if you don't have the sense to understand that basic part of owning a gun, then you should not have one.
Well, Mark, you bring up some good points in your voicemail. You know, there are people out there that probably are so fearful, and it's kind of a false sense of fear, but they're reacting by the false education that they've been given by media and by just general gun haters in the world. And yeah, maybe those are the types of people that shouldn't have a gun. And I'm not saying that they don't have a right to have a gun. They do. They certainly have a right to own a gun. You know, we have a fundamental right to own a gun in the United States, and it's protected by the Second Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. The Constitution doesn't grant us that right, it protects that right. But at the same time, people have a right not to carry a gun. And Mark brings up a good point. If there are people who just simply can't get over the immense fear and would be unsafe with a gun, I mean literally unsafe, then maybe we should discourage those types of people from owning and carrying a gun. Good point. I like to encourage people as much as I can. I like to educate. I like to take them to the range, get them shooting. The vast majority of the time, you get somebody who's never handled guns before, you get them to the range, you teach them the basics of safety, and get them shooting. And boy, all of a sudden, their attitudes just change completely. A lot of people are that way. You know, it's just that they haven't had the good experience. They haven't had the experience to figure out just how cool it is and how much fun it is. Really, that's the thing, the fun. And then they get that feeling of freedom, right? They get that feeling of freedom when they fire a gun, because that's really what it is. It's freedom. And that normally changes their mind and changes their attitude. Have you noticed that? If you have the experience of taking out new shooters, that's normally what you experience. You know, taking them out to go shooting is what I mean. If you have that experience, that's normally what the kind of reactions that you get from new shooters. But Mark, that's a good point. That's not a bad point. All right, let's go to the next voicemail.
Hey, Bob, it's Matt. I was just listening to your podcast with Grant Cunningham, and it makes a lot of sense what you were saying. It reminds me of some of the classes I've taken where they're talking about doing reloads, and they stress that you should bring your handgun up into your field of vision so you can keep an eye on the threat while you're reloading. So I just, you know, for what it's worth, that's my 2 cents. I thought it was interesting. It works well with that train of thought, I thought. So anyway, thank you for everything you do. God bless.
Thank you, Matt. That was a great interview with Grant Cunningham last week. So many thanks again to Grant Cunningham. Check out his website and everything he does at grantcunningham.com. Yeah, Matt, you know what? That's what we teach. When we teach classes and teach people to do reloads and clear malfunctions and things like that, bring that gun up into your workspace. In other words, bring that gun basically right up by your chin. Okay? Bring that gun right up by your chin when you're performing your reload. That way you can keep your eyes on the threat. You can keep your eyes on the bad guy and know what it is that he's doing. That's important. You need to keep your eyes focused on the threat. And doing a reload and clearing a malfunction, these need to become reflexive responses, folks. These need to be automatic reflexive responses, or reflexive actions. Things that you don't have to think about much. You have a reload? you have a malfunction, tap, rack, and bang. You should be able to do that quickly. Real quickly. Bring that gun up into your workspace and do that. Okay? If you've got to lock that slide back and rip that magazine out and put a fresh one in there and run that slide, excuse me, rip the magazine out, run the slide several times, clear the magazine, or clear the chamber, put the fresh magazine back in the gun, chamber around, and get back in the fight. That should all be reflexive. That should all be automatic. I can do it better than I can explain it here in a podcast. But you've got to be able to do that and bring that gun up by your chin, you know, sort of in front of your face, down at about chin level. Bring that gun up. That lets you do all that and keep your eyes on the bad guy. You have to keep your eyes on the bad guy, on the threat at all times as much as you possibly can. Too many times I see people in a class make a mistake. They hold the gun down by their waist when they're reloading. You know what happens when you hold the gun down by your waist when you're reloading? Your head will also look down and your eyes will look down at the gun. And when your eyes are looking down towards the ground at your gun while you're reloading, your eyes are not looking at the bad guy. And you can't see what he is doing or about to do to you. And that could be a very dangerous thing. So, Matt, thanks for calling that voicemail in. Okay, that's going to do it for the voicemails. Just those two. I did get an email and some Facebook messages from some people. You know who you are. I'll probably be talking about your messages next week. I did get one email. A listener wants me to talk about lasers. Now, you know, I don't have a whole lot of experience shooting pistols with lasers on them. So what I'm going to do is, before I do a podcast on shooting a pistol with a laser, I'm going to get a hold of a pistol with a laser. I'm going to borrow one from somebody. And I'm going to run a significant amount of rounds through it. And then I can comment on it. I don't really like to comment too much on guns or techniques if I haven't either owned the gun or performed the technique several times. I think it's a disservice to you, the listener, if I just talk about things that I don't have a lot of experience with. Would you agree? So, I would rather not talk about it and wait until I have some experience and be able to talk from a level of experience and coherent and make it worthwhile rather than just throw out my opinions. My initial impression, I will give you my initial impression because I have fired some pistols, like about one magazine, that have a laser on them. I do think the lasers are a bit slow, but maybe that's just a training issue. When I say slow, I spend too much time looking for the red dot. And by the time I make sure that red dot is on target, by the time I spend the time to do that, it seems to me like it's too late. The bad guy could have stabbed me already or something. So, but maybe that's a training issue and I've just got to work on that. So that was just my initial impression. I may change my mind. So what I'm going to be doing over the next few weeks is trying to see if I can get a hold of a gun with a laser, maybe a revolver, maybe a semi-automatic, and see if I can borrow one and shoot it. All right? And then I'll report back to you. Okay, I'm about ready to conclude. With all this said, I have one announcement that I want to make before I sign off. I'm in the process of getting hats, shirts, and sweatshirts made that promote the Handgun World podcast. Yeah, finally. I've been playing with this idea for 3 or 4 years. Handgun World podcast hats, hoodies, and t-shirts. A great listener, Alex, up in the state of Washington, is in the business, and he's putting together some samples for me, and as soon as the samples arrive, I'm going to take a look at them. I've got some general pictures on my Facebook page. Check that out. Check those out and see if you might want to support me. I think the hats are going to be around $20 and probably... No, the shirts are going to... The t-shirts will be about $20, the hats $25, and the sweatshirts $35. So they're not going to be real expensive, and it's... You'll see my new logo. If you go to handgunworld.com, you'll see my new logo. Or if you check out my Facebook page, you'll see my new logo. And that's all they're going to have on there. They're just going to have the Handgun World podcast logo front and back on the shirts and the front of the cap. And I think you're going to like it. They look pretty cool. And that's going to be another way that you can help support me and, you know, give me a little bit of advertising support out there, too. Great shirts and hats to wear to the range. That'd be kind of cool. So I will let you know when I get those samples. I'll take some pictures of them. I'll put them up on Facebook, probably put them up on my webpage. I'll probably at some point set up a store on my website where you can order those, and they'll be custom made every order, and they'll get shipped out to you in all different sizes. So be looking for that. Give me some feedback on that as well. I'm always open to feedback. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. Many thanks to Paul Carlson. That's the first time I heard that said. And I borrow that from Paul Carlson of the Safety Solutions Academy. And you know what? A lot of you have asked me what this music is that I play in the beginning and the end. The name of the song is You Ain't Getting My Guns, and Ozark Revival is the artist. Go to OzarkRevival.com. They gave me the permission quite a while back to use this song. You Ain't Getting My Guns, Ozark Revival, OzarkRevival.com. Talk to you next week. Goodbye. Good.